Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Beyond Reality. I'm your host, Dr. Shelley Kerr, and you can give us a call today and talk to our guest at 1-877-876-5227. And make note that our new website for the radio station is bbsradio.com. And also, I'm happy to tell you that I have learned, finally, how to work the computer at bbsradio.com, and so I'm going to be able to update and give you updated information about upcoming programs. On the 22nd of August, I'm thrilled that we're going to have Jonathan Goldman. You may be familiar with his music. He's a Grammy Award-winning musician who does all of those awesome meditation CDs, including Chakra Chants and the Ultimate Om, and he's just the nicest guy in the world. So we're going to have him coming up, and I've got a very exciting guest that I'm going to introduce here in just a minute. But first I wanted to talk about just reiterating some of the things that we've been talking about over the past couple of weeks on the show about how important it is right now for you to maintain a positive attitude with all of the things that you're hearing about on the news and in the world at large. I was on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Friday night during the first hour, and we were talking about, you know, doing one of George's famous mind experiments to try to send some light and some peace over to the Middle East. And I was discussing things that I've already discussed with you before, but just how, you know, every day you need to get up and think about what you are grateful for and continue to notice gratitude and all of the blessings that we have in this country instead of noticing all of the things that are not maybe such a blessing at this time, because whatever you're noticing and whatever you're putting your attention toward is what you're going to get more of. And right now we all need to be just sending that positive energy into that area. We've got, it's almost like a yo-yo. Yesterday they said we're dropping the weapons, today they're picking them back up again. So it's just very, I think, crucial right now that we all just hold that in our minds, that we just want them to just put those weapons down, go home, and just continue on with the peaceful world that you and I want to live in. So that's my soapbox for tonight. Luckily, we're done with it. Okay. My guest tonight is William Stillman, and this is something that is very near and dear to my heart. Bill is the author of a book called Autism and the God Connection, and another book called Demystifying Autism. And the reason why this is close to my own heart is because I have an autistic brother. And I think that the world needs more people like Bill, because he's getting out there, giving information and spreading the word about just the fact that we're all people and we're not all made the same. And that's what makes the world a beautiful place. Let me just put it that way. So Bill Stillman is the author, as I said earlier, of Demystifying the Autistic Experience, a humanistic introduction for parents, caregivers, and educators. This book has been highly praised by the autism and self-advocacy communities. Bill himself is an adult with Asperger's syndrome, which is a mild cousin of autism. And his message of reverence and respect has touched thousands nationally through his acclaimed autism workshops and private consultations. Bill, welcome to Beyond Reality.
Hi, Dr. Shelley. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really delighted. And if I may, for just a moment,
yes,
build a little bit upon your speech that you made just moments ago.
Absolutely. Please do.
Because as a person with Asperger's syndrome, you know, we're the detail people, and there's not much of anything that we filter out because our senses tend to vibrate at a higher frequency than most other people. So I'm very observant and very, very aware of everything that goes on around me. And like I'm sure you do and many of your listeners do, I've been paying very close attention over the past several years to what I'm seeing as wake-up calls. that we're getting and that are coming in closer and closer proximity, not only with war, but with terrorist acts, with global grand-scale natural catastrophes, with an overall general deterioration in courtesy and etiquette. And this is reflected in our popular culture and in our entertainment and in all the reality shows which are predicated upon deception and double standards and attaining physical beauty at all costs. And a lot of times that nefarious behavior is rewarded. So I've been seeing this decay going on all around me. And as you echoed just a few moments ago, I think the world needs autism. You know, the current statistics are one in every 166 children is now being diagnosed on the autism spectrum. 10 years ago, it was one in every 10,000 children. And that's just children. That doesn't include the rest of us who are grown-ups.
Right.
So what's going on? What's happening? I'm not at all surprised that we're seeing a veritable explosion of all of these little people being born, because I think that when you're in the presence of someone with autism, and I'm sure you know this all too well, you are compelled to slow down, to refrain, to disallow yourself from using so many words, to just be and be present with that individual. And I have to tell you, I have yet to meet a person on the autism spectrum who has not, in some way, communicated to me their desire to teach. This is a universal theme, and it's something that I write about in my book, Autism and the God Connection. And what do you suppose people with autism are telling me they're here to teach?
World peace, compassion.
Yeah, the most salient themes of the human experience, right? Compassion and tolerance and sensitivity and, of course, unconditional love. So I really see autism as a piece of this learning curve that we're all on. And some of us are learning at a different rate than others, but we've all got to work together to pull everybody else along and begin responding to these wake-up calls with the reverence and the respect and the renaissance for this renewal of our humanity. I think it's urgent.
It's definitely urgent. So what do you think caused the deterioration, in your opinion? I mean, you've talked about the decline that's being reflected through the music, the reality TV trash, and all of that. Do you think it's just cyclical, or is it a symptom of a bigger problem?
Gosh, you know,
in your opinion,
I'm not sure where to lay blame, but I can tell you that where autism is concerned, it seems as though people prefer a tragic spin. I can't tell you how many parents I meet who lament, my child's autism is a death sentence. And in fact, just recently, I've heard from two different parents who compared their child's functioning as being on par with that of a dog. Now, where is that coming from? In my opinion, it's coming from two different sources. First, it's got to be driven in part by the diagnosing clinician. I've worked with some terrific doctors, and doctors who really get the whole aspect of reverence and respect and presuming the intellect of people who otherwise are labeled mentally retarded. But I've also had the experience of working with some clinicians who are of the old school, who are rigid and unyielding to accept new ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to believe that in part it's being driven by doctors who are making diagnoses that are exclusively deficit-based. In other words, your child won't ever speak, your child will need perpetual care, your child will never be in a relationship or be employed, and those kinds of projected doomsday type of predictions. And then I also think, and this is why I'm so thrilled that you're having me on your program, I think that the media has a tremendous responsibility to cease and discontinue putting this tragic spin on autism. Because I am so weary, Dr. Shelley, of reading accounts of someone with autism that refer to us as the afflicted sufferers stricken with a devastating disorder. So there's a real double standard here in that we elevate to superstar status the young fellow with autism from Rochester, New York, whose basketball team was losing, and he was put in the last 4 minutes, usually sat on the bench, never played, and scored 20 points, which propelled them into the championship finals. So he's getting his picture taken with the president, and there's a bobblehead doll made in his image, and there's going to be a movie made out of his experience. There's a double standard in that that boy's story is plastered all over the Associated Press and ESPN, and at the same time that was playing out, there's this little autistic fella in Arizona that's being denied communion, and he's so passionate about his religion. He can't always reliably swallow the communion wafer because of sensory sensitivities in his mouth. So I'm wondering, will that young fella ever do anything in his life to merit having his picture taken with the president?
Exactly. You're listening to Beyond Reality. I'm talking to Bill Stillman. You can visit him online at williamstillman.com, and you can give us a call and ask him a question at 1-877-876-5227. Bill, don't even get me going, okay? Because I cannot deal with how cruel, this is another whole bottle of wax, but how cruel people are to other people just because they're different. I mean, there's just no excuse for it. And I know one of the things that you've said in your writings is that you should always assume intelligence. And
yes.
Why, I don't understand why people are just so, to me, they are the ones who are stupid. I mean, because the people that I know with autism and Asperger's are actually, you know, far more intelligent, in my opinion, than the rest of us. I mean, we've talked to my brother extensively about, you know, because he wants to talk about, well, you know, he knows he's different than other people. And my dad and I are telling him, look, you know, you are actually leaps and bounds above what our brains can even handle and probably most of the population out there. And I just think it's really good what you're doing, because there's just got to be more people out there like you, you know, spreading the message of tolerance.
Well,
and acceptance and trying to get to know someone who's different than you are.
In my book, Autism and the God Connection, I do talk at length about the tremendous importance of starting from the premise of presuming intellect. And to get that concept across, I use the analogy of the person with cerebral palsy,
mm-hmm.
who may outwardly present as someone who is severely incapacitated and might present in ways that are comparable to autism. So the person with cerebral palsy may be unable to speak or have limited vocal capacity. She may have limbs that are unreliable to her, that tense up and spasm, not of her volition. She may be unable to ambulate without the use of a cane or a crutch or a wheelchair even, and that person may also need a lot of assistance with all kinds of self-care skills. However, and this is my contention, it does not stand to follow that her intellect is compromised to the same degree as her physical shell. And this is the proper response to autism. This is how we need to re-envision the autistic experience, because that's the truth of it. And you're absolutely right. I have many, many friends who bear the label mental retardation, who do not speak, but communicate in speech alternatives. These are people who live in silence. And when you live in silence, you do a lot of very careful observation. You've got a lot of time to be thinking and processing information. And in my opinion, it's no different than the perpetual meditative state of people of a high religious standing who take a deliberate vow of silence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Something you mentioned earlier was, you know, talking about labeling people and diagnosing, the amount of diagnoses that are now being given as autistic. Do you think that the society as a whole, the medical community, is too quick to want to put a medical diagnosis on people these days and label them as something? I mean, don't you think that, because autism is very interesting in that people present with all different kinds of syndromes or symptoms or different things that they're doing. But to a certain degree, I think that from what I could tell, my brother had been diagnosed and was put in special ed classes when we lived in North Carolina because people just didn't really know what to do with him. But some of the people who were in those classes were far more mentally disabled than he was. And I think it really slowed him down. And it wasn't until we came to Texas that they had started to integrate him into regular classrooms. And so then the expectation of the person becomes different. Because when you put a label on someone, like what you were saying, that it's always negative, your child will never do this or never do that, then the child begins to become a reflection of what people expect of him or her.
Absolutely.
And if we would expect
absolutely
that these people are actually more intelligent than we are, then there's just no telling what they can do. And I mean, like Stephen Hawking, I mean, the man is like one of the most brilliant minds that's ever walked on planet Earth, but yet he cannot physically communicate with us.
Right.
And we could go on and on about all this stuff. And also there's, I wanted to mention, you mentioned cerebral palsy, and one of my very best friends has cerebral palsy, and he's one of the smartest people I know.
Exactly.
And there's,
yet, I'll bet that there are times when you're out with him in public and someone turns to you and says, what would he like to order?
Oh, don't even get me going. Or they look
right
at him, you know, because he's taken a long time getting in. I don't see that. I don't see that about him. And when we first became friends, he said, you know, you're the first person who ever treated me like I was a regular person.
Well, I've got to tell you that in my book, Autism and the God Connection, I talk about that concept. And I talk about if we have been unpresuming of intellect, there are three miracles that we can enact to make that right. And once you commit to that, truly commit to it, genuinely and sincerely, I share some anecdotes about some really amazing things that have transpired as a result. And I don't make any promises or guarantees, but it's not uncommon for some people to actually begin to speak where they had not been speaking previously as a result of demonstrating this renewed respect. So I absolutely understand and appreciate what you're talking about. I'm not so sure that it's so much the medical community desiring to be so quick to slap a label on people as it is with the increase in autism. We have a lot of very young parents who, with the advent of the internet, are also very knowledgeable and savvy parents
mm-hmm.
who are becoming very well connected through chat rooms and message boards and listservs and news groups and so forth. And I've been in this field for almost 20 years now, and the one thing that parents tell me means more to them than anything else is the opportunity to connect with another parent in a similar situation. So I think that there's a great parent advocacy movement, and one that says, I want to know as soon as possible so that we still have a window of opportunity within which to support our child as he or she is developing.
You bring up such a good point because several years ago, my next-door neighbor had adopted a little girl, and it was clear to me that this girl needed some extra care and attention. And now, but the parents sometimes are also in denial, like they don't want to go there.
Right.
And we would say, you know, I mean, she had met my brother, and I talked to her, you know, I think maybe your daughter may need, you know, to take a look at this. And she's just like, oh, no, she's just fine. And last night I was at dinner with a friend, and she said that her cousin's daughter is like this as well. And I think that the parents need to get out of the denial, because the longer they wait, then just the more detrimental this becomes. This one girl, I mean, she just was very developmentally challenged in ways that I think could have been prevented by just some early intervention. So what do you have to say about, like, how important it is to be observant and say, hey, I need to maybe get my child some help?
Well, what I have found to be true in autism is that a number of children come by their autism honestly. And by that I mean that I meet a lot of adults with Asperger's syndrome, which is that high-functioning autism, who are undiagnosed, and they are the parents of the children for whom I'm consulting.
Mm-hmm.
So in communicating information to them that might be very sensitive, I have to bear in mind that I would want to communicate to them in ways similar to the way I would want to get something across to the person with autism.
Right.
But if I may, I just want to go back and revisit something you were talking about around the competence and the intellectual brilliance of so many people with developmental differences being beyond that of people who are neurotypical. Well, the whole premise of autism and the God connection is not only are we talking about folks who are our intellectual peers, but we're also talking about folks, many of whom have the aptitude for readily accessing their spirituality in ways that a lot of people who are neurotypical do not, because they're so caught up in the garbage that we've been talking about, and they're blocked from seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely attest to that with my brother. He seems to have all kinds of spiritual experiences. I was reading some of your information talking about, yeah, this is what I wanted to ask you about, that he seems to speak to someone, but they're not there. And you said that maybe that happens at the same time every day. What is that exactly?
It's very common. Actually, it's very common.
Is he talking to someone, like a guide, or do you think he's, I don't know.
What happens is, and even in someone with autism who's not wired for speech, this happens. I get reports like this on a fairly regular basis of the individual with autism, whether it's a child or an adult, going off to be alone in the same place, usually at the same time of day, and they're sort of gibbering and jabbering and communicating in an empty room. If you pay close attention to that, you will hear that it is two-way. You will hear the individual pause and await a response.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I need to say is, number one, don't interrupt it. Don't intrude upon it. Number two, let's not jump to hasty conclusions by immediately labeling it as a symptom of a mental illness. And three, what we need to understand is that people with autism may lead extremely challenging lives. We also have a tendency to vibrate at a higher frequency than most other people because of our acute sensory sensitivities. So take what you know to be true about your senses and bump it up 10 notches, and you'll be up where I am, kind of vibrating up in the stratosphere. So this predisposes some, not all, of us with autism to be open to perceiving things that are seen and unseen, and this is natural for us, not supernatural. So what I've concluded, and I talk about this in Autism and the God Connection, is that folks who appear to be severely incapacitated are not simply thrust into this life without some kind of compensation. And the compensation comes in the form of what I think of as this daily or regular respite. And what's been communicated with me is that those two-way conversations are occurring with an ethereal entity that some people have defined as angelic.
I can believe that. I'm a believer. Now, we probably should have started the conversation by this, but I know that autism is very hard to define and to describe, and every year they've got a new definition or a new thought about the causes of it, because at this present time the causes are pretty much determined to be unknown. So
correct.
How would you, at present, define autism and then compare it to Asperger's syndrome?
Sure. To be eligible for the diagnosis of autism, there are a number of clinical criteria to be met, and unfortunately, the clinical criteria are all deficit-based. In other words, the actions and activities or lack thereof that the individual engages in that are polar opposite from what's typical. So when we think about someone with autism, we think about someone who primarily cannot speak or has very limited vocal capacity. And when you can't talk, it stands to reason that the quality of the social interactions that you'll have is going to suffer for it. So we also think about people who are challenged in initiating and sustaining social interactions of all kinds. We also think about folks who may engage in a repetitive or perseverative action or activity or a vocalization. So that might be someone who is repeating the same sound or word over and over again. They may be rocking over and over or flapping their hand or switching a light switch or opening and closing a door or twisting a faucet over and over and over again. We're also talking about folks who are not as physically graceful as they might wish to be. And that's a very gentle way of saying sometimes we're awfully clumsy and we're not coordinated, because if we're presuming intellect, the receptive thought processes are intact. The expressive thought processes are compromised. In other words, the person with autism can't speak, but the receptive processes are intact. In other words, we hear and take in everything that's going around us. But it's almost like, have you ever fallen asleep in the middle of the night and you wake up and your arm is creased and it's dead from the elbow down?
Yes.
Okay. And you are mentally willing that limb to move, but you cannot. And that's an apt analogy for describing the interaction that the autistic individual has between her brain and her body. So people have described their bodies as being like cement. The brain is sending the message, willing the body to move and behave in ways that are quote-unquote typical, but there are neurological disconnects and misfires that preclude the body from acting on the brain's messages. So this is why some people with autism come across in ways that are very, very different. Now, the distinction with Asperger's syndrome is that there are no developmental or cognitive delays. In fact, the child with Asperger's syndrome may demonstrate a precocious ability for using language and reading adult caliber vocabulary, and that's called hyperlexia. Our downfall is, outside of our topics of passion and special interest, and outside of very structured settings, we flounder socially. We don't understand people and how they work. And we don't interpret correctly a lot of double entendre, sarcasm, innuendo, and slang. So, for example, I'm going to check in at a hotel, and the woman who's the clerk at the front desk says to me, "Well, enjoy your stay, Mr. Stillman. Your room's right down the hall from me." And I say to her, "You mean you're staying here too?" So at
Right.
So at times it's almost like a real life rendition of Abbott and Costello's Who's on First.
Exactly. They probably think, "Oh man, this guy's funny," and you're going, "What was funny about that?"
Exactly. I don't get a lot of humor.
Now, is there any research that supports the idea that people without verbal skills are actually more attuned to different types of input? Kind of like the blind person is more tuned to hear things, or
right. The only research that I'm aware of, and I don't mean to sound self-congratulatory, is my own research in my book Autism and the God Connection.
Yay! Congratulations.
And again, I think it comes back to the concept of existing in silence. And if you read all of the written works of religious leaders and spiritual practitioners and philosophers, they all talk about the concept of God loves silence, and in silence you connect with your true self. You combine that with that kind of meditative silence with the rocking and the hand flapping and the repetitive vocalization that a lot of people with autism make, and we're talking about people who are working themselves up into a mantra, like a yogic meditative state.
Yeah.
And the double standard there is, it's like a perpetual state of meditation. The double standard is neurotypical people and people of high religious standing endeavor to get to that level. And we're trying to wrench people with autism out of that to make them normal.
Yeah, it's frustrating, because I think that there's a lot of writing right now, I don't know if you've heard about this, about, you know, people think that these special children are being born right now, and they're calling them the indigo children. This is kind of a new agey thing. I don't know if you've heard about it, but they claim that these children have these indigo blue colored energy fields around them. And you know, the bottom line to me is that if we believe in evolution and we believe that humanity is evolving over time, then it would make sense to me that the children being born today, whether they be autistic and functioning at higher frequencies, or whether they have blue energy fields or whatever, that these people would be more intelligent than we are, because hopefully we are hopefully we're continuing to become a more evolved and intelligent species as time goes on.
Well, was aware of the whole Indigo Kids movement, and I deliberately refrained from reading anything about it until after I had written my book, because I didn't want to be unduly influenced by any of it.
Right.
But what I can tell you is that a mom who is a friend of mine recently wrote an article, and she was talking about the dramatic explosion of kids being born with autism. And she said, you know, at the rate we're going, in 20 to 30 years, a good portion of our population is going to be autistic. And she said, think about that. There'll be no more war.
Exactly.
And all of our great leaders will be peaceful, gentle, exquisitely sensitive people. And she said, that's evolution. To which I respond, that's not just evolution, that's revolution.
It is. That's kind of what I think. I mean, I don't, you know, I've interviewed some of the original authors of some of these Indigo books. That's really how it was brought into my attention. But to me, it's not really about saying these kids are special. I would just like to say these kids are evolving. I don't know. I mean,
well, the only thing I can say in response to that is that when compared against the philosophies of Indigo Kids, my position is one that I believe is much more reverential and gentle.
Yes, I know what you're saying. Because I think right now, and you've brought this up at the beginning of the program, we're having, let's say, a crisis, or maybe even a stronger word would be better, in the school systems, where we're having these kids have these violent outbursts and stuff. And I think some of the parents are justifying their behaviors by saying, well, they probably are just an indigo kid, and they don't like the way we're treating them, and, you know, and using that as an excuse for poor behavior.
Well, I think that as a parent, regardless of whether the child is an indigo kid or autistic or how you define her experience, parents have the right to set parameters, and parents have the right to expect responsibility and obligations as they would for any of their children, even to the child who is autistic. It's just that how you communicate those responsibilities and obligations is going to be through a different method than you would communicate to the kid who is neurotypical or average, or I don't even like to use the word normal. It's going to look very different, because a lot of us with autism don't assimilate verbal language. We're very, very visual. Like, I think in pictures and movies, constant streams of visual imagery, and I can call up imagery in the same way that you can flip through a photo album or watch an old home movie. Going back to near infancy, that's how I think. So if you want to communicate something to me and have me retain it, you'll do it in ways that are visual.
Because your
spoken words dissipate into thin air right after you say them.
What you're talking about is really, really important. The thing I wanted to talk about, the educational system in this country. I mean, regardless of what is going on with the children today, I think we could agree that they are more intelligent. But the problem is right now is that the educational system isn't keeping up with the demands of an evolving population. And I think that that in and of itself, like identifying the fact that certain people are visual learners, certain people are auditory learners, some people are actually kinesthetic learners. And I had studied neurolinguistic programming, and part of what that's teaching is you can look at a person's eye movements and you can tell what kind of a person they are. And I've seen a lot of people who are autistic or with Asperger's who they will actually look down, and that means that they're more kinesthetic. And so they may be doodling or looking like they're spacing out. But just because they look to the outer world like they're spacing out, they're actually needing to go into that kind of stance in order for information to be absorbed and actually retained. And then
well,
the teacher doesn't understand, because the teacher just doesn't get it. So there has to be an evolution and a revolution in our educational system for all the children who are coming up.
Right. The business about eye contact is that it's not a symptom of disrespect or incompetence or avoidance. It's that I can either have a conversation with you or I can look at you, your choice. Because I'm extremely visual and I'm constantly distracted by detail. And your eyes are in constant motion. And there's flecks of color on top of color, and there's a glistening on your membrane. And if you wear glasses, there's reflection in the glasses. And people wear jewelry all over their face that's distracting, and even on their tongue. And the human mouth is a horror in and of itself. I mean, the tongue and saliva is rolling around in there, and people's teeth are different shapes and different colors, and it's too much visually to take in. I tend to look at people's mouths or chins,
mm-hmm.
and that way I can hear what they're saying and don't have to be distracted by their eye gaze. So what I tell people is that when you're having a conversation with somebody with autism who appears not to be listening to you, believe that they're taking in most everything that you're saying, as opposed to what people have been trained to do, and educators and therapists, which is grab somebody by the face and say, look at me, and compel them to make eye contact.
Exactly.
You know.
And if you do that, then certain people, like the ones you're just describing, they cannot even learn in that way because it's
they're not going
stimulus.
To learn. And getting back to what you were just talking about with the education system, you meet one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. Because we're all very unique and individual, and yes, we may share some commonalities. But the problem is that autism is an industry.
Mm-hmm.
And because we know so little about autism, everything and everyone is fair game. So that there are a lot of people who are profiting from programs and methods and interventions. People, parents in particular, are really uncertain as to which direction to go, which path to pursue, which avenue to explore. And so I think that parents and educators are really struggling.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think one of the most interesting things that you mentioned was the fact that now one in every 166 children are being diagnosed with that. And so in the negative world that we live in, unfortunately, people are going to go, oh, this is an epidemic. You know, I think it's awesome. But
well, again, in Autism and the God Connection, I do talk about that. And I talk about the fact that despite the international scrambling of researchers and scientists around the clock, there is no one single known cause for what is driving this explosion. And I think that there's a beauty in that. And I think that there's a purpose in it as well. And thank God for it, because I think we need more people in the world who are gentle and who spend time in silence and who desire to teach unconditional love.
I think it's wonderful. There's a whole school of thought right now that the planet itself is going through different energetic shifts as the frequency of our planet raises. And so to me, this seems natural that we would get more people coming in with a higher frequency. And as you pointed out that your friend was saying, yeah, this is going to be great in a few years. The whole country can be run by peaceful, beautiful people.
Right. Well, and this is an international thing, too. It's not just the United States. So there is definitely a shift that's coming, and I've been seeing it and sensing it, I think, since before people started talking about a shift.
Right. Do you think that you mentioned 10 years ago only one in every 10,000 was diagnosed with autism? Do you think that was just that more people went undiagnosed, or do you think more autistic people are coming into the planet?
I think it's both. I do think it's both, because I look back on my history in the field, and I know that 20 years ago I was a direct support professional providing care to adults who were labeled mentally retarded, And looking back now, I know a number of those folks were absolutely autistic, but they'll never have an autism diagnosis.
Right.
So I think that the numbers of the statistics in part can be attributed to a more accurate diagnosis. And some of the children being diagnosed with autism now, back then, probably would have been diagnosed as mentally retarded. But I also do believe that there is a real spike in the numbers of kids being born.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, we've got a few more minutes. I'd love to hear about your early childhood and your journey through your diagnosis. I know that maybe we don't
that
have time
for
the whole thing, but
minutes.
When did you first realize, hey, maybe I'm a little bit different than other people?
Hi, this is Brenda in Dallas.
Oh, Brenda. Oh, good. I'm so glad you called. This is my friend Brenda, and she has an autistic son. So, Brenda, this is Bill. So go ahead
Hi,
and
Brenda.
Ask your question.
Hey, Bill. It's such a great program. I have an 8-year-old autistic son, and in what you're saying, I'm just kind of wondering, you know, my question has always been, is there anything such thing as a cure? I know technically they say there isn't. And I'm wondering now, though, if we should even be looking for, you know, quote-unquote cure, because I know these kids are very special, and my son definitely is. But are you aware of anyone who's really made that kind of progress, if you know what I'm saying? You know, does that make any sense?
It does, and I appreciate your question. And I think it's a very delicate and sensitive topic to broach with parents of very young children. And again, it gets back to something that Dr. Shelley and I were talking about just moments ago around parents being faced with what seems to be an infinite number of different paths to pursue. And because autism is an industry, we do have professionals and business people who are always dangling that carrot of recovery and cure. And Brenda, I don't know if you've been aware, but very recently, within the past couple of months, there have been 4 different incidents of parents taking the lives of their young children with autism. Are you aware of that?
Oh, my God. No, I haven't heard that.
Yes.
Although there was a CNN story that I just watched a video on, and this woman was talking about tempted to drive off a bridge rather than, you know, continue to deal with it. But, yeah.
Well, I think that parents are under so much pressure and so much guilt to do everything in their power to sacrifice their jobs and their homes and their marriages in
right.
order to fix their children, that they stop at nothing. And when the fixing doesn't seem to be getting them anywhere, they're at a loss, and it's pressing people to take very drastic measures. And again, this is not the way to perceive autism. I think we've been praying for the wrong miracle, because the miracle's staring us in the face.
You know,
as
I
you
think
said,
you're right, because they are so loving. My son, yes, he's got challenges, and he's, you know, it's just so frustrating, because it just seems that they're so misunderstood.
But he is your teacher.
Yes, he is, and he's given me a purpose in life beyond what I ever dreamed I would have. You know?
Thank you. That's the validation. God bless your heart.
Well, thank you. I really, really, really appreciate what you're saying, and it's very refreshing, because, as you know, there's a lot of basically information overload out there on so many ways to go and conferences and classes and courses. But just to understand, you know, that this is a spiritual experience as well as a physical one.
Thank you very much. It absolutely is. And I've had people come to me and say, in broaching this spiritual aspect, why is God punishing me? Or why is God causing my child to suffer so?
Right.
And my response is, God's not causing your child to suffer. If your child is suffering, it's because of the ignorance and the lack of vision on behalf of people around him that are imposing their mores.
That is so true. And we need to learn to be more like them instead of trying to make them be like us.
God bless your heart.
Well, thanks, Bill. I really appreciate your work, and I'm so glad Shelley had you on here, and hopefully there will be a lot more of this kind of programs that the masses, it's very frustrating because so many people around us, they just avoid what they don't understand.
Yes.
And I think, you know, if people that don't have to deal with autism are maybe more inclined to understand it for, you know, whatever reason, it's going to just make their lives, you know, more meaningful and better somehow. But thank you so much. I'll let you get back to the program.
Thank you,
Brenda.
Okay, God bless.
God bless. You know, something when she was talking, I was thinking, it's just about what we've been talking about. It's not that someone's broken, I need to go fix them. I mean, we could talk about that even in any relationship. You get in a relationship with someone, it's not working out, or you have a friendship and it's going awry, and what does the other person want to do? They always want to change the other person. But I think it's just like shifting the mindset. This person isn't broken. They don't need to be fixed. And, you know, we are who we are, and we need to bless each other for who and what we are.
Right. And I don't mean to come across sounding like I'm trying to glorify autistics or sugarcoat or whitewash anything or anyone, because people with autism, especially people who appear to be severely compromised, absolutely do have extremely challenging lives.
Right.
But let's acknowledge that the secret of autism and the God connection is that we really might be talking about people who are spiritually advanced.
Exactly. Yeah, I wanted to talk about, you mentioned cerebral palsy earlier, and one of the more decent reality shows on there is called The Last Comic Standing, and there is a guy on that show, everybody should check him out, his name is Josh Blue.
I saw him briefly.
And he had cerebral palsy, and he is so awesome because he just makes kind of some jokes, and he talks about people talking down to him, and he's got some jokes about it, saying, you know, because he's an intelligent guy, but he's really out there showing the world in a similar way that you are, that, you know, everybody's different, but everybody's bringing some of the diversity and the beauty to the world that we live in, and I think it's just great.
Well, he's probably doing it in a better way than I am, because he's using humor to diffuse stereotypes, and I'm about as dry as you can get.
Well, you're doing your part, Bill. I mean, believe me. I just think that however everybody is going out and expressing this, that we just need to get more into a place where we're just ready to tolerate each other and realize that everyone has unique gifts and unique ways of being, and let's just try to accept each other and get on with our peaceful life. And I love the fact that the world is going to be run by peaceful, God-loving people, because that is exactly what we need to have happen.
Well, I think that's a very eloquent summary.
I have been talking to my special guest tonight, Bill Stillman. You can visit him online at www.williamstillman.com. He's got lots of interesting books, which I am going to order from my mother. One is called Autism and the God Connection, Redefining the Autistic Experience Through Extraordinary Accounts of Spiritual Giftedness. And his other book is called The Everything Parent's Guide to Children with Bipolar Disorder and more. And you can get all of these books online at williamstillman.com. Bill, thank you so much for being on the show today.
It was an absolute pleasure and a delight, and thank you so much for being so gracious to ask me.
I'm just really glad to do it. You keep up the great work, and God bless.
Thank you. God bless you and your listeners.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. You've been listening to Beyond Reality with Dr. Shelley Kerr. You can visit me online at www.galactichealing.org. I've got some new books out. One is called Just Write It, The Step-by-Step Guide to Writing and Publishing Your First Book. And you can see that online at galactichealing.org. We'll be back next Tuesday at 4. 6 Central for another exciting episode of Beyond Reality. And remember to tune in on the 22nd of August when my special guest will be Grammy Award-winning musician Jonathan Goldman. Until then, I'm Dr. Shelley Kerr. Namaste, and keep the peace in the world by being the peace in yourself. Thank you.